Was that the biggest one you have flown?
Yeah. It had 144 foot wings, but I remember that real well. It had two 10 horse motors for each engine, or each landing gear, whose job was to only one worked at a time, but they had a backup that you could. And all of this redundant stuff you had to check before you took off. Pain in the butt. But we were there, and life in Montgomery was great. They had an officer's club wars downtown. And we, of course, Maxwell Field, we had a beautiful officer's club, the golf course going right up to it. And we got to spend time there. Do you need a little piece of that paper? Okay, now we're still at Maxwell Field. I used to go to Birmingham socializing, but Huntsville wasn't very big at that time, so it wasn't very interesting for people to go to. But there's an old hotel in Montgomery which is still there, and the officers' club in town was upstairs in one of the upper floors, and it was nice, very nice. And of course, our dates used to like to go there because it was sort of a big deal to get to go to the officers' club. And the commanding officer, I think it was an advanced school, was telling us at that time we were transported all over by train, not airplanes. Mm-hmm. There was always a troop train that had to pick us up. And so when the whole class went, there was a troop train that came to get us. And he said, the commanding officer said, "It's so sad." He said, "I see the same girls saying goodbye to every class."
Same girls from the town.
The same girls from the town.
That's what I'm saying, I'm doing that.
Where did you go from?
After that, I went to the University of Wisconsin when I was discharged in November of 45. And I can remember well. We were at the officers' club in Maxwell Field. And when the news came that Japan had surrendered, the general was in there. And he was inebriated pretty badly. And a bunch of the WACs got hold of him and threw him in a pool. He didn't mind a bit. But after I was discharged, we were there quite a while waiting to get discharged. I didn't get discharged until December, I think, or January. And then I went to University of Wisconsin. And I was in pre-dentistry, would you believe? But I stayed there for 2.5 years. And the only dental school in Wisconsin was Marquette, which is in Milwaukee. And they only had openings at that time for 78 freshmen. And there was a waiting list. So I said, "Well, no problem. I'll get in the restaurant business." Which I did. Got in the restaurant business. And then my wife at that time worked for a curtain rod factory called Graber's. They made these rods that pulled grapes back and forth. They were one of the first in the country. And I got a little bit of working experience with those guys.
How far did you get into the restaurant business?
Oh, I was in it the rest of my life. Never got back to school.
What did you
I got so much money invested in it, I couldn't get out. A Kroger store, when I bought a little greasy spoon, was the first one. Only had 24 seats in it. And the first day I was there, the guy that sold it to me was supposed to stay there and teach me how to cook, because I never cooked a day in my life. And he didn't show up. He took his money and went to Arizona. And it was the 5th of July, I'll never forget it. In Wisconsin, that's the busiest day of the year because it's the beginning of the heavy tourist season. And we were on a road Highway 12, 13, and 14 going to Wisconsin Dells. And everybody was on their way up going up there and back. And I imagine I threw away a case of eggs that first morning trying to get one or two in a pan without breaking the yolk. And the waitresses were mad at me. Then about 10 o'clock, the little old lady that was washing dishes came up. She says, "What are we going to have for lunch?" I said, "Lunch?" But anyway, I stayed in the business for 26 years. Bought a motel. Was in that for 6 years.
Bought a motel? Did you have your restaurant business at the same time as when you bought your hotel?
Motel. Yeah, it had a restaurant, bar, and banquet rooms in the motel. But as I'm trying to remember here. At the same time, when I was in one of the first restaurants, a Kroger store went out of business across the street in that little greasy spoon I was telling you about after I'd been there a couple of years. And so I put an expensive restaurant in there, and it took off very well. And I was there 13, 14 years. And in the meantime, when I was over there, I did most of my time in the kitchen cooking. And one day I got a call from Truex Steel, which is an Air Force base in Madison. They wanted to know if I wanted to go back on flying status. Looked down at that dirty apron and think, "You bet." Anything to get out of there. So I went back, and they didn't give us any, and I hadn't been flying for the military now for 4 or 5 years. And they didn't give us any formal training to get back with it. And I started flying a C-45, which is still one of the most difficult airplanes I've ever flown, tail drag, the C-47. And a C-119, and I was flying all three of those.
When you say a tail dragger, what is?
It's got a tail wheel.
Okay.
Whereas the plane that Sarah's flying has got a nose wheel.
Okay.
But I was with those guys in for 2 or 3 years, and they offered me the opportunity to go to Reno and go through helicopter school. So I was in Reno for 6 months, and it was interesting. Got to fly a Russian ski team over to Lake Tahoe. It's near Weaver State Air Force Base. They had a Olympic tryouts or something at that time, and they just built Lake Tahoe at that time with a skating rink and ski jumps and everything else. Well, it's interesting. I went over there as a civilian, of course, and without my knowing it, I had to take a, what the heck do they call it, course, where they turn you loose in the woods, survival course, and I didn't have any military clothes. All I had a civilian Mackinaw, from Wisconsin, who wore one of those. So they made me get military, the cheapest way I could get around it was to buy a raincoat and then buy a cap, that was my uniform for that part. Although I didn't get more clothes later. But that lasted 10 days, and I lost 15 pounds on that survival trek.
What else were they?
What
all they make you do?
Well, they turn you loose in the woods. And they give you a little rabbit. Now, there were 6 of us, and we had a young corporal as our instructor. And there were colonels and everything in that group. I was a captain at that time. And so they gave me a rabbit, and so we tied it. And they gave us each a piece of a parachute that was supposed to be similar to what we'd had if we got shot down.
Mm-hmm.
And then a parachute would be our tent. Well, the stupid situation out there was hunting season was out of season. So they gave us a rabbit to take along. And we were supposed to divide that amongst 6 of them. He couldn't weigh more than a pound, he's a little guy. And of course, first day or two, everybody was, he was a cute little guy, and everybody was petting him. The third day, man, we were getting hungry. Poor little guy, he did the best. And this went on, and we were taught how to set snares to snare deer or whatever. And one of the other classes caught a porcupine. One of the other groups. But then the last day, our instructors became the enemy, supposedly. They turned us loose, and we had to go over a mountain range and get back to a place where we could be picked up. And this was tough, because you couldn't see, didn't have flashlights or anything. And our instructors were in a place where they could capture us. And they captured us, and it was cold. It was in November, and we were all stripped, and it was a weird situation. One of the guys, one of these poor guys, has lost all his hair in his body, no eyebrows, no nothing, no hair anywhere. And these instructors just made so much fun of him, and they called me a farmer. And anyway, it was supposed to, this is right after the Korean War, and they were simulating the situation that prisoners of war were in Korea. So that's pretty much how that all went down. And I learned to fly helicopters. One first one I learned to fly was an H-19. Which had the same engine as that AP-6 I was telling you about some time ago. I think that's the engine it had, but it wasn't very powerful. It was 10 passengers, but if you put 10 people in there, you never got off the ground. And we used to fly the thing up to on top of a mountain called Wild Horse Mountain, which had over 10,000 foot of elevation. And we had to take off. We had the helicopter loaded with sandbags, as much as we could dare put in there. And then the helicopters, when they're overloaded like that, can't go straight up. They have to make a running takeoff and get into translational lift. So we got our translational lift by literally falling off the top of that mountain. And it was good training. And after that, we went into H-21s, which is the flying banana. That had a rotor on each end of the thing.
Okay.
And the engine was in the middle, extremely noisy. And they were tough to fly. And the problem was that the back tail, it was 4 feet higher than the front one, so it wouldn't be enough prop force to the front rotor. But when you're coming in for a landing or something, where that back rotor would have a tendency to get into the prop hoist. So that's the one time when you kind of wish for a crosswind, because it blew your prop hoist away. But it was a good thing. Hard to fly. And I got back to, and it had, all of these helicopters had the equivalent of power steering in a car. They had hydraulic boost for all the controls. Then I got back to Madison and Truex Field, and I had to fly an H-5, which is the first operational helicopter in Korea. And it didn't have, we call them servos, power steering, hydraulic boosts. You had to have, be strong as a dickens to fly the darn thing. You developed a strong right arm.
How long did it take you to get through training for the helicopters?
Well, 6 months. I went in November and didn't get out until May. Of course, that included that darn survival course.
Okay. Was that, was it faster for you to get through helicopter training with already being a pilot?
No.
Or does it start from scratch?
The people that started from scratch were ahead of me. The reason is that the torque on a helicopter is on the left foot. Torque on an airplane is on the right foot. The throttle on a helicopter is a motorcycle throttle on the left hand. And you have what they call a cyclic up and that you steer the thing with.
Mm-hmm.
The cyclic has got a mic button, it's got a searchlight button, it's got a hoist button, so you got your thumb working a lot of buttons.
You think it's harder to learn how to fly planes or the helicopter?
Oh, helicopter by far. It took me 15 hours to solo my darn helicopter. It took everybody 15 hours.
Was that the...
At that time, I probably had 2,000, 3,000 hours of military flying time.
It's a lot of hours.